Hare Krishna. So I thank all of you for coming here today, and I apologize, I had a meeting with Bhakti Marg Maharaj and he's going today to India, so we had to talk some urgent things and that's how it got delayed. So today we'll be talking about probably about the character who is probably the most controversial in the Mahabharata, and that is Karna. Now I'll give some background in terms of ethical theory, and then I'll go into the incidents first of all. The Mahabharata says that right and wrong, they are not categorical. I mentioned this earlier, that categorical means this is right and this is wrong. It's not categorical, it is contextual. It's dependent on context. And broadly speaking, now what is right or what is wrong, this can be determined in three ways, three primary ways you could say, in terms of intent, in terms of content, and in terms of effect. So in terms of intent, if say somebody has got a wound in their body and the child is in great pain, and somebody says, oh, you know, you got a wound in this body, I'll cut it, I'll remove the infected part and I'll heal it. The intent may be good, but if the person doesn't know how to do surgery and remove the infected part, the good intent is no substitute for good execution. So I may say that I have good intent, but unless I have the competence, the qualification necessary to do right things, I cannot do it right. So just the rightness of intent is no justification for whatever we do. I have to see the intent. I have to have the good intention. Just like a doctor, the doctor is doing surgery. The doctor is, while doing surgery, thinking that maybe, I can maybe complicate this a little bit so that I can get more money, I can have more tests done, I can have more operations done. The intent is bad. So intent does matter. But intent is not all that matters. After intent, there is whether we are capable of doing the right thing or not, that also matters. Now here I am talking more in terms of competence. Good intent is not a substitute for good competence, the capacity to do the things right. So now when we come to the specific actions that we are doing, there is the content of the actions. Content means what we are doing. So some actions are good, some actions are bad. But say for example, if I put a knife in somebody's stomach, that's bad, normally. But if I'm a surgeon who is putting a knife in somebody's stomach so that I can treat and heal them, then that's good. So we could say that by the content, this action is good and this action is bad. But content is also not a decisive marker of determining what is the right thing. Same putting knife inside the body, that can be completely different. That can have different implications depending on who is doing it. And that brings us to the effect. The effect means sometimes a doctor may have good intention, a doctor may be competent also. But sometimes just unexpected complications happen and the patient dies. So there are effects. So now that means what is right or what is wrong, we could decide it based on intent, we could decide it based on content, or we could decide it based on effect. And in ethical theory, there are specific schools of thought which are associated with each of these. Decisions made based on content, decisions made based on intent, decisions made based on effect. We'll not go into all that. But at this stage, now we will look at, I won't go over all of Karna's life, but I'll look at some of the major decisions that he made, and especially the last decision which he made of turning away from Krishna and choosing to stay with Duryodhana. So the character of Karna is something which many of us can relate with easily, for the simple reason that Karna appears in the Mahabharata as a wronged hero. Life gave him a raw deal. He was born as a Kshatriya, as a hero, but he was never recognized as a hero. And one of the most common feelings that people have, almost everyone has, people feel, I don't have enough money, or I don't have enough this, I don't have enough that. But now the most commonest lacks that people feel they have is almost everyone in life, they feel I am underappreciated. And we all feel that I am not appreciated enough. I am doing so much, but people don't appreciate me. And Karna is a character who is like that. And we feel, oh, he was so competent, he was so skilled, he was such a great archer. And on top of that, he has virtues also. He was charitable, phenomenal charitable. So we feel that, oh, no, he's a wronged character. Because often life also gives us raw deals at times. So we can relate with Karna easily. So when I first watched the Mahabharata, it was almost maybe 20, maybe 30, 35 years ago. So at that time, when I saw Karna, he was a character that resonated with me immediately. And whenever anyone would call him Suta, now Suta is actually is not a bad word. Suta is also respectable in terms of, if you consider the Varnashram hierarchy, Sutas are actually a combination of Kshatriya with usually a Vaishya. And the word Suta has different meanings, but in this context, they are charioteers. And to be a charioteer is a respectable thing. They are getting close association of the king or association of a great warrior, and they are friends with that warrior, friends with the great hero. So charioteer is a respectable thing. But in the context of Karna, he always felt it like an insult. Because that Suta was used, or he felt it was used to point out that he was not a Kshatriya. And he wanted to be a Kshatriya. So it's when we are judged for something which is not in our power, then we feel very helpless. It can be very bitter. So when I was in school, some students would tease me, cripple. So now, it makes one angry. So I can relate, when somebody judges you for what you are not, and then somebody accepts you at that time, then we are in a very emotionally vulnerable situation. And at that time, if somebody accepts us, we become overwhelmed by that. And that is what happened to Karna when Duryodhana accepted him. See, I explained earlier how Duryodhana had this deep-rooted envy against the Pandavas. And he felt, I can deal with Bhima, but I need someone to deal with Arjuna. And when in the martial exhibition that was done after Drona's students graduated, so basically it was a private ceremony. Just like say, here you have Toronto University, and then if Toronto University is having say a debating school, and then the expert debaters come out over there, and then at the time of their convocation, they are exhibiting their debating skills. And at that time, somebody from some other university comes in and says, I will exhibit my debating skills. Well, yes, you can have a competition, but that is not the forum. No, that is for the Toronto graduates. So like that, the martial exhibition was a forum for Drona students to exhibit their skills. But Karna, he had talent, he had capacities, he had great archery skills, but he was itching for recognition. I am also a great hero. And he gatecrashed over there. I can do everything. I will excel what Partha has done. And then, am I allowed to participate? So now, Kripa and Drona nodded. So then he started exhibiting the skills. And he equaled everything that Partha had done. He wanted to excel him, but at that point, he equaled. And then seeing that he had not been able to excel, he said, I would like to challenge Partha for a duel. So, at that time, Arjuna stiffened. From that time, this like a lifelong rivalry was born. So Arjuna was about to start a duel. Now at this point, Kripa asks, wait a minute. This is going to be a duel. The credentials of both the parties are to be known. And we know who Arjuna is. Everybody knows him. Who are you? Now where do you come from? What are your antecedents? Which dynasty do you belong to? And his head fell at that time. So everybody understood that he was not a Kshatriya. And when this happened, Duryodhana was an adept politician. So So politician means they are always eager to strike alliances. So your enemy's enemy is your friend. So Arjuna is my enemy and Partha is his rival. So he immediately, now Duryodhana was being a good politician, an opportunistic politician over there. But what he did, he took the moral high ground and he gave a speech. He said that, you know, how do you think that a goat can ever give birth to a lion? Just can't you see his arms? Can't you see his skills? He's such a great hero. He must be the son of a hero. But if you think that the characteristic of heroism is that somebody should have a kingdom, then I will bestow him the kingdom. And there itself he asked water to be got, and there he coronated Karna as the king of Anga. And Karna was completely overwhelmed. Now, what was about to be, it was like a very turbulent period for Karna. First was, he came in and he equaled the greatest archer of his time. It was a moment of great jubilation. But the next, when his antecedents were asked, he felt humiliated. And now, suddenly he was made a king of a kingdom. You know, he was immediately like granted entrance into the ranks which he always wanted to belong to. He was completely overwhelmed. He says, oh, Duryodhana, I am so grateful to you. What can I do for you? Now, whatever were the evils of Duryodhana, Duryodhana actually knew how to manipulate people. So he said, oh, Karna, I do not want anything from you except your lifelong friendship. And Karna, oh, that you will surely have. And then now, significantly, 2 points before we move forward, that actually Duryodhana, he gave the kingdom to Anga to Karna. But actually, it was not Duryodhana's kingdom to give. Now, at that time, the status of the kingdom was disputed. That was actually Dhritarashtra was the caretaker king, and Duryodhana in that sense had no right to the kingdom to give to someone. But because it was a matter of a member of the family, it's like, you know, if you have a big joint family and then one member says, oh, I'll give you this charity, and then it becomes a matter of the prestige for the whole family. If somebody says, no, we'll not give this charity to you, it becomes disgrace for the whole family. So the Pandavas stayed silent to maintain the honor of the Kuru family when the charity was given. So it was not his charity to give. And we could say at this point that Karna, he might not have known about the evil nature of the Duryodhana. And so he accepted that friendship. He might have been guileless. He just wanted somebody to, some way to compete with Arjuna. That's fine. So his gratitude is natural. It is good. It's virtuous to be grateful to somebody who has done good for us. But what happened thereafter is, the Mahabharata described that Karna's cause of ruination was his misdirected loyalty. Loyalty is good, but that loyalty blinded him to the vices of Duryodhana. So thereafter, whatever scheme Duryodhana came up with, Karna either consented or he aggravated that scheme. So initially Karna protested. For example, when the Kauravas conspired to send the Pandavas to Aranavart, where they would have them burnt, Karna said, why do you want to try such devious things? Let's call them for a fight, we'll defeat them and you can take their kingdom. You'll have the full kingdom. At that time they had no kingdom. So you will inherit the full kingdom. Shakuni said, you will not be able to defeat him. And Duryodhana was caught between these two people. He had faith in Karna's prowess, but he felt Shakuni is more mature and Shakuni is more skilled. So he went along with Shakuni's plans. So initially, in some of the schemes, Karna opposed. But eventually, that bad association had effect. You know, who we become largely is determined by which social circle we want to belong to. And if you go to college, then there are some clubs. If I want to belong to this club, then I have to become like this. You know, I have to do these things. So what happened is Duryodhana had his own club and Karna, he wanted to belong to that. And for that purpose, Karna did terrible things. So during the Draupadi's disrobing, we discussed earlier how it was Karna who suggested that Draupadi be dragged into the assembly and disrobed. It was Karna who called Draupadi a prostitute. It was Karna who opposed Vikarna when Vikarna had said that the whole gambling match was rigged and it should be declared null and void. And later on, when Draupadi asked for benedictions, or rather Dhritarashtra gave benedictions to Draupadi, and the Pandavas were released. And while they were going along, Karna just could not. This was actually, the whole thing was had calmed down. And Draupadi had saved the day in one sense. Although she had almost lost her honor, but she had saved the day. She had got the restored everything for the Pandavas and things could have ended amicably. But Karna could not resist a cheap shot. He says, just see these heroes who have been saved by a woman. This is a very cheap shot which you took. And that inflamed the Pandavas and Draupadi both. So later on, when Karna meets Bhishma, just when Bhishma falls on the 10th day of the war, and the 11th morning, I'm talking about the war, Kurukshetra war, 11th morning, Karna goes to meet Bhishma. But that is the day when Karna is going to start fighting. So at that time, Karna says that actually, he apologizes to Bhishma for the harsh word that he has spoken. Normally, the Indian tradition is that no matter how bitter our relationship is with someone, if that person is going to die, before that we patch things up with them. We go and speak pleasing words, apologize, and patch things up. So Karna went and he tried to patch things up with Bhishma. And Bhishma was also very understanding. And Karna at that time says that, I should not have spoken those words, what I spoke to about Draupadi over there. It is only because I wanted to please Duryodhana that I did those things and I regret it. So now, so what happened is, he not only went along with Duryodhana's evil ways, but he did more. He actually gave up his virtue of protecting women, which is a Kshatriya's duty, for the sake of pleasing Duryodhana. So every virtue is good. But when one virtue becomes so great that it makes us trample on other virtues, if my loyalty becomes so great that because of that loyalty, I don't protect those women am I meant to protect, then that is disproportionate. That can be dangerous. So this is with respect to Karna's choices. I'll come to Karna's last choice a little later. But before that, let's look at the competence. So in terms of intent, so my frame of analysis is intent, content, and effect. So in terms of intent, Karna may have intended simply, I have got archery skills, I want to show them to the world. And I want a platform by which I can show it to the world. That intent is not wrong. And with that intent, he accepted the friendship of Duryodhana. But what happens is, in the intent, if we just give importance to one thing and neglect other things. So gradually his intent changed, not just from exhibiting his archery skills and trying to become the best archer. His intent changed to wanting to please Duryodhana and do whatever it takes to please Duryodhana. And so that's why if our association is not good, we may start with good intention, but the good intention will not stay, because our intention is often affected by what the kind of people we associate with. So his intent got contaminated. Now, as far as the content of his actions is concerned, how many people feel that actually, Karna was the better archer, and because he was a better archer, therefore, that is the reason why Krishna had to tell Arjuna to kill Karna unfairly at the end when his chariot was off the ground. So let's go over the history of the encounters between Karna and Arjuna and see who was the better archer. So we have a hockey match, you have goals, we'll keep track of scores. How much were their encounters and what happened? So the first encounter was at Drona's martial exhibition. And both of them exhibited equal excellence. So it was like a draw. Arjuna 0, Karna 0. Then the next, so there were some encounters were direct, some encounters were indirect. After the martial exhibition got over, then they both the parties, Pandavas and Kauravas, went to Drona to give his Guru Dakshina. And Drona said, arrest Drupada and bring him to me. So both the Pandavas and Kauravas started rushing. So at that time Arjuna told, stop. let the Kauravas go first. So now when the Kauravas were going, at that time Karna also went with them, because Karna also he wanted to belong to that group. And they attacked Drupada's army, and you know, Drupada along with his full army just effortlessly defeated Duryodhana. And Duryodhana had to flee at that time, and at that time Karna was also there, and Karna also fled. And after that, Arjuna and the Pandavas attacked, and Arjuna attacked with such force that Drupada was defeated, and Drupada was arrested and brought before Drona. So here what do we have? Drupada defeated Karna and Arjuna defeated Drupada. So Arjuna proved himself to be superior to Karna. So we have Arjuna 1, Karna 0. Now after that, the two faced off in Draupadi Swayamvar, where in terms of hitting the target, now either Karna was not allowed to shoot or Karna shot and missed. Let's leave that part apart. But later on, when Arjuna won the hand of Draupadi and then they're going to take the bride, you know, the Kshatriyas became furious. They said, what is this? Now she's a Kshatriya princess and you invited all of us to the Swayamvar, and now you are letting a Brahmana take her. You are dishonoring us, and we will punish you for this. And they all got up, they took their sword, their bows, and they started charging towards Drupada. At that time, Yudhishthira was there. Yudhishthira said that Drupada is now our father-in-law. We have to protect him. So then, both Arjuna and Karna, Arjuna and Bhima sprang into action. So at that time, Bhima fought with Shalya, the kings led by Shalya, fought with Bhima, and Arjuna fought with Karna. And they both fought and fought. Karna initially shot arrows lightly, thinking, what can this Brahmana fight? I don't want to injure the Brahmana. But what to speak of he injuring the Brahmana started injuring him. Surprised. He kept shooting with better arrows and all of them were countered. And finally Karna said, oh venerable one, I do not want to fight with you. The Brahmanas are always to be respected by the Kshatriyas. And he stopped fighting. So basically again, you could say here it was a draw. Arjuna, the score remains Arjuna 1, Karna 0. So it is Arjuna did not defeat Karna, Karna did not defeat Arjuna. And after this, the next encounter was when the Pandavas were in the forest. At that time, Duryodhana wanted to flaunt his wealth to the Pandavas. It's like, you know, somebody is sick and they are fasting, and then you are eating a big feast, and you go into their sick room with your feast and show it, hey, I'm eating this, just to make them feel miserable. So like that, what Duryodhana wanted to do? To take all his wealth and go and flaunt it in the area where the Pandavas were staying. And now at that place, the Gandharvas were there. The Gandharvas were sporting, and the Gandharvas said, Duryodhana, you cannot come here. I said, this is my land, I can come wherever I want. He says, no, this is what we are having our activities over here. So there was a fight in which actually Karna, Duryodhana, Dushyasana, Shakuni, all of them were there. And the Gandharvas just overpowered all of them. Shakuni fled first, and Dushyasana fled. And Karna got injured, Karna also fled. And Duryodhana was left all alone. Duryodhana fought and fought, but he was just not competent. He was overpowered, he was arrested. And after that, some of the Kshatriya warriors, some of his soldiers were there, they ran over and told Yudhishthira. He said, Duryodhana has been arrested. Please save him. So initially Bhima was not very eager to save. Bhima said, oh, at last the gods seem to be favorable to us now. He said, that which you would have had to do at the end of our exile after great effort, the gods have done for us now. Yudhishthira, he was concerned more for, he said, you know, for us they may be 100, we may be 5, but for the world we are 105. Now they have arrested Duryodhana, they have arrested our Kuru ladies, we have to release them. And Bhima was not ready. So then Yudhishthira, you know, although he was very virtuous, Yudhishthira also was a diplomat. Yudhishthira said, oh Bhima, just think, what can give you more joy than to have the power to decide, to have your greatest enemy dependent on your mercy for his freedom. So go there and grant this freedom to him. Ah, Bhima said, I'll go down. So then Arjuna led the charge and Arjuna defeated the Gandharvas. So here also what happened? The Gandharvas defeated Karna and Arjuna defeated the Gandharvas. So we have 2-0. Okay. So now after this, the next encounter happens at, anyone remember? It is at Virat. Yeah. Now Virat was a, Arjuna was like a solo performance. You know, he was all alone and he defeated the whole Kuru army. In that, Karna attacked twice. Both times Karna was repulsed. And it was a clean victory. You know, the whole Kuru army on one side, Arjuna on the other side. And Arjuna single-handedly won. So here we have Arjuna 3, zero. Karna 0. Now, after this, for the first 10 days, Karna was not fighting, so there was no face-off between them. Then the next 5 days, there were some face-offs between Karna and Arjuna, but because Drona was the main person who was attacking at that time, Drona was in command, so there was no sustained face-off between the two. The major face-off was between Karna and Ghatotkach, in which Karna killed Ghatotkach, and in the process he lost his Shakti weapon also. So now on the 17th day, when the final war took place between Karna and Arjuna, so actually Karna was the commander for 2 days, 16th and 17th. So 17th day when they fought, the fight was going on fiercely, on and on and on. And eventually, Karna, his chariot went underground. It got stuck in the ground. And he got furious. He said, he was telling Shalya, get the chariot out. Shalya said, I cannot get it out. Then Karna told Arjuna, oh Partha, do not entertain the thoughts that are entertained by cowards. You know, remember the codes of morality and wait till I am in the proper situation to fight. And he got off his chariot. And he was trying to pull the chariot wheel out of the ground. So at that time, Arjuna dutifully put his bow down. And at that time, Krishna called out to Karna. Oh Karna, it is fortunate that today you remember the codes of morality. Was it the morality by which you suggested that Draupadi be disrobed? Was it morality by which you called Draupadi a prostitute? Was it morality by which you conspired to have the Pandavas burned alive? Was it morality by which you cheated Yudhishthira at the gambling match? Was it morality by which you joined 5 other warriors in killing the 16-year-old Abhimanyu? If that was morality, Partha will use that same morality and kill you today. Arjuna, shoot. Before this, when Krishna spoke like this, now Karna turned around, Karna's head fell. He had the opportunity to climb back onto the chariot, but he did not do that. Turned back and tried to lift his wheel again. And Arjuna shot an arrow and cut off his head. So now, if we look at it, in terms of competence, Arjuna has clearly proven his superiority over Karna. Then why did Krishna have to get Arjuna to kill Karna like this? See, the Mahabharata is a very realistic book. Realistic book means that it, as I told earlier, when it talks about Yudhishthira also, Yudhishthira Dharmaraj, but it says he also has a weakness. So it does not talk about characters, some characters are entirely white and characters are entirely black. All its characters have shades of white and black. Even the white characters have some black, and even the black characters have some white. So the Mahabharata, in terms of morality, it also teaches. So that it teaches that Shatho Shatyam. Shatho Shatyam means with the cunning one needs to be cunning. With the cunning one needs to be cunning. Now if people are cunning and if we are very, very straightforward and honest with them, they simply take advantage of us. So especially this is all the more true in politics. In politics, if one person is very upright and principled and the other person is doing all kinds of cunning things, basically a certain amount of shrewdness is required in politics. And the Mahabharata's morality is centered on the conduct of kings. So Krishna wants to demonstrate over here, with the cunning, one needs to be cunning. And was it a violation of Kshatriya code in terms of, you know, one unarmed warrior being attacked, unarmed warrior without a chariot being attacked by another or your who was in a chariot and who was with weapons. Yes, definitely it is a violation of Kshatriya code. But again, going back to the start of the war, what was the agreement? The agreement by the Pandavas and the Kauravas, the Pandavas said, we will not be the first to violate the Kshatriya codes. If you violate, then we will not hold ourselves back. Now, if you see this specific Kshatriya code of shooting, hitting a warrior who is not on the chariot and who is not having weapons, this was done first by the Kauravas on the 13th day when they came together and killed Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu was chariotless, Abhimanyu was weaponless, and they attacked him. Six of them attacked him and they destroyed him, made him defenseless, made him very vulnerable. So on the 14th day, the Kauravas did the same thing with Arjuna. Now on the 14th day, Arjuna had taken a vow that before sunset, I will kill Jayadrath. And he penetrated deep into the Kaurava ranks. So the Mahabharata describes that the Kauravas had arranged their whole army to stop Arjuna. And their military formation was practically miles and miles, and at the end of it was Drona. So Arjuna penetrated deep into it, forcefully cutting a way through that military formation. But by the time the half the day got over and the sun started its downward descent, at that time Krishna told Arjuna that so forceful has been this pursuit that, Arjuna, your horses have got tired and they cannot move forward anymore. They will need to be rested, they will need to be fed. So on hearing this, Arjuna got off the chariot, Arjuna invoked a mystic weapon, and right in the middle of the battlefield itself, he created a lake with green grass nearby, and Krishna lauded Arjuna, oh, excellent Partha, excellent. And then Krishna took the horses over there. Now during this point, Arjuna was defenseless. In terms of Arjuna was not on the chariot, was off the ground. Now he did not tell the Kaurava, hey, stop, remember the codes of morality, stop, don't attack me. Now the Kaurava forces just kept attacking him. And Arjuna was just going round and round, whirling round, and whoever would come near him, it was like they were meeting a wall of arrows. And Arjuna held them all back. So actually, especially after, as long as Bhishma was in command, Bhishma more or less maintained the codes of morality. But Drona, the Mahabharata also says, Drona also got contaminated by the association of Duryodhana to some extent. Not that he became evil, but the goading that Duryodhana did, that got to Drona. And Drona decided, no, they just to some extent gave up the ethics. So from the 11th day onward, the codes of morality were not followed so well. So, in a battle like that, no quarters are given and no quarters are to be expected. So, Arjuna kept fighting and he held back, and then Krishna came back and then got on the chariot and they continued their pursuit of Jayadrath. Now, on the 17th day itself, the same day when Karna and Arjuna were fighting, at that time, Karna took a mystic weapon and he shot that mystic weapon towards Arjuna. So, now at that time, there was Ashvasena, who was the son of a snake bird. He was a snake weapon basically. He also wanted to take revenge against Arjuna. So he entered into that arrow. And when he entered into that arrow was so powerful that it would have killed Arjuna. Now usually when Arjuna, he was fighting with bow and arrow, he had two strategies. Sometimes he would just counter his enemy's arrows, or sometimes he would let the arrows hit him while he was hitting the enemy. And he had his faith that my armor is strong enough and my armor can deflect the blow of that arrow. So this was an arrow which he did not recognize that it was a powerful weapon. So he neglected countering it. He kept shooting his own attack without focusing on that arrow. Now Krishna saw that arrow. Yeah, this is Ashvasena. And Krishna realized that this will kill Arjuna. So now what had happened before that, when Karna told Shalya was a charioteer, I am going to use this arrow and I will kill Karna. I will kill Arjuna. So Shalya told, shoot Arjuna in the chest. Now kill him by hitting him, shooting in the chest. Now the shooting in the chest, the advantage is what? Even if you go a little off target, below there is the stomach. You hit the stomach, that's also fatal. If you meet it, go a little bit after it and go up above the neck, that's also fatal. And so if you kill a person by shooting at the chest, the chances of killing that person are much more. But you know, Karna, he wanted not just to win, he wanted a classic win. It's like, you know, if you kill someone, that person falls down. Okay, that's dying. But you kill someone and the person's head flies off and everyone can see the head flying off. It's like, you don't just score the winning run while winning, you hit a sixer and you win. So, Karna wanted to do like that. So, Karna shot at the neck, targeted the neck. And Krishna saw that arrow coming. Krishna banged his foot heavily on the chariot side. And as he banged the foot on the chariot side, the chariot sank into the ground. And as the chariot sank into the ground, the arrow that was meant to hit Arjuna's neck, that knocked off his crown. Because Arjuna went down. And then, at that time, because the chariot had gone underground, so Arjuna was immobilized. And Krishna had to get out of the chariot, drag the chariot up, pull it out, ride it, and then start fighting. Now during this time, Karna kept shooting and Arjuna kept countering. So the very same code which Karna said that, you know, you are violating, and people say that Arjuna had violated, but Karna himself had violated it. And twice he himself had been a part of it, when killing Abhimanyu and when attacking Arjuna. And third time, Arjuna had been targeted by the Kauravas. So it's the Kauravas were basically paid back in their own coin by Partha. And they had actually dished out a lot of injustice to them. So the principle is, you know, so here we come to the effect. The point is that if the opponents are cunning, and if I say, I will always stay principled, no, I will not be shrewd, I will not do any of this business, then sometimes in this world, you know, the results are not determined only by principles. You know, I may be a very principled sword fighter, but if somebody attacks me from behind, you know, my principles are not going to save me at that time. I have to turn around and fight. So I have to have a guard behind me, or I have to be skilled, or I have to do whatever it takes. What the Mahabharata says is, in terms of effect, the effect was that the Kauravas were vicious, the Pandavas were virtuous. And for overcoming the vicious, whatever is required, one should be ready to do that. So in terms of effect, if some effect is desired, how we get it, that is not as important as we make sure that we get it. Now this does not mean that anyone can do anything for getting the effect. We see the Pandavas tried strenuously to petition peace. And to what extent Pandavas tried to petition peace? It's Krishna himself went to petition peace. Now Krishna is, although he officially had no position as the king of Dwarka, but everyone knew he was an extraordinarily powerful warrior. And for Krishna himself to go to petition peace, you know, to give a rough parallel, it is like, say, India-Pakistan, there are some tensions now. So when there are some negotiations, say the Indian Secretary of State goes, or the Indian Security Head goes, and the Pakistani Security Head comes, and they talk. But suppose the Indian Prime Minister goes to Pakistan to petition peace. That means, basically what it conveys, the post of the person who is going to petition peace, the position of the person, the stature of that person, that conveys how serious that peace petition is. And you know, there are also ways of saying no. If somebody asks us to do something, I say, sorry, you know, I have to do something else, so I can't do this. There is a way of saying no, where we say no to the request without saying no to the person. That means, you know, I respect you, I would like to do this, but because of this, I am not able to do it. It's a polite way of saying no. And there is a way of saying no, where the purpose is not just to say no to the proposal, to the request, but the purpose is to demean and deride and mock the person. So what did Duryodhana do? When Krishna went to the peace proposal, Duryodhana didn't just say, no, I won't give land. What is that? I won't give enough land to even put the tip of a needle through. So this is not just refusal, this is arrogant refusal. This is arrogant refusal. So the Pandavas tried everything possible to settle the dispute by peaceful means. But once that is not possible, then whatever it takes. Whatever it takes, Krishna did that. Krishna told the Pandavas to do that. So we have to make sure that we get the desirable effect. This does not mean that any arbitrarily morality has to be subordinated or rejected, but in exceptional situations, if that is required, that is what needs to be done. In exceptional situations again. So now going back one step further. So in terms of competences with respect to Duryodhana, with respect to Karna, we discussed in terms of effect. Now, if you talk about the whole idea that Karna was wronged. Karna was wronged in the sense that he was born as a Suta and he was never respected as Kshatriya, and at last minute also his chariot went underground. And that's how there are so many. So sometimes people feel that Karna was a victim of destiny. So you know, he was victimized, life was so unfair to him. Yes, it is true that life was unfair to Karna. But the fact is, life is unfair to everyone. You know, if we look at life from this lifetime's perspective, you know, we all can have some grouses. You know, maybe, you know, I don't have a good enough memory, I don't have good enough looks, my parents were not that wealthy, or whatever, you know. We can all have grouses with what we have got in our life. Life from this life's perspective is not fair to anyone. And what is, why to speak of the Pandava, Karna specifically? Look at Pandavas themselves. The Pandavas, they were born in royalty. Their father was the king. But then suddenly they were thrust into a family conspiracy where their own cousin was trying to kill them. Now, what was their fault by which, because of which they became the target of such malicious envy? We could say the Pandavas got a raw deal also. Although they were recognized as Kshatriyas, but they did not get their rights as Kshatriyas. They were constantly threatened. Actually, when Duryodhana was just a small, less than a teenager, you know, 10, 11 years old, at that time he made a whole conspiracy to have Bhima poisoned. Can you imagine the extent of insecurity? Normally at home when we go home and then we relax and we eat food. That is why we feel comfortable. But at your home itself, somebody is poisoning you. So that was the level of insecurity and danger the Pandavas were at. So Pandavas also got a raw deal. It is not that Karna alone got a raw deal, in their own way. Now if you see, Karna actually got a big starting advantage. He got the Kavach and the Kundal. So I was telling this point that, firstly that, if you look from this lifetime's perspective, everybody gets unfairly. If you look from a broader lifetime, a multi-lifetime perspective, and there's a whole story of how Karna was Sahasra Kavacha, was a demon in his previous life, and he had 1,000 Kavachas, and after 999 Kavachas had been killed, 999 Kavachas had been destroyed, he ran and took shelter of Surya. And Surya was a Kshatriya, so if somebody comes to take shelter, he has to give shelter. So I'm not going into the whole story. If I get time later, I'll go into it, but I'll just give the outline over here. So then, Surya, he had to give shelter to Karna, but at that time, Surya also did not want to give him shelter. So Narnarayan Rishis, they had been asked to kill this demon Sahasra Kavacha. And they had removed 999 Kavachas, but one Kavacha was remaining. So then, Surya, he gave shelter to Karna, but then he also wanted to, he didn't know what to do with Sahasra Kavacha rather. So that was the time when Kunti chanted the mantra to invoke Surya. And so Surya, what he did? Surya gave that Sahasra Kavacha as a son to Kunti. So yes, Kunti did not acknowledge him as her son, and that was his problem. But as I said, Pandavas also had that problem. But here, by that, they did not get their rightful kingdom, although they had deserved it, because Duryodhana was malicious. So now he had that one Kavacha remaining. So, and further, because he had associated with Surya during that period of transition, by that, because he was the progeny of Surya and Kunti, who both of whom were virtuous, so he also got some virtues. So from his past life, he had some vice within him, and from the persons from whom got birth, both of whom were relatively virtuous, one was a god and one was a virtuous lady, so he got some virtue also from there. That's why he's not a completely black character. He has virtues, but he had that vice also from his previous life. So he was actually getting the karma which he had got from his previous life, if you want to look at that perspective. He had to suffer and he had to die, and that's what happened to him in this life. But from his, from the point of this point of this birth, actually he had a kavach and kundal, and that kavach practically made him impenetrable, undefeatable. The Pandavas were also born from the Devatas, but the Pandavas did not have any kavach like this. So in that sense, we could say Karna was not disadvantaged. Karna had advantage. He had an impenetrable armor from birth, which the Pandavas did not have. Now, as far as he being cursed, yes, we see that curses are not uncommon. Yes, he was cursed that his chariot will go under the ground. I'll not go into the story of the curses. But he was cursed. But if you see, Arjuna was also cursed. Now, at least for Karna, you know, he had accidentally killed a cow. And because of the Brahmana said that you are so foolish, you killed a cow, so your chariot will go under the ground at the time of your greatest need. Now, what had happened to Arjuna? Arjuna had gone to the heavens, and at that time, Urvashi had become attracted to him. And she came and offered herself to him. And Arjuna said, you know, you have been the queen of my ancestor Pururava, and therefore I see you like my mother. She said, no, you know, in our heaven these things don't apply. She says, no, but you are in heaven, I am only temporarily in heaven. For me the earthly morality applies. So I cannot see you as anything but mother. Oh, she was furious. You know, for her, you know, she was so beautiful that men would come to her to beg her favor, and she was offering herself. She was refused. She said, you know, you are no man. You know, you have no manliness in you. Therefore, I curse you that you lose your manliness. Now, Arjuna was actually very disturbed hearing this. You know, for a Kshatriya, his virility is a matter of pride for him. Now, we could say that Arjuna was even more unfairly cursed. At least Karna did something wrong, not intentional. But he killed a cow. Actually, Arjuna did something which requires great renunciation, great self-control. And yet for that he was cursed. So he also got a raw deal. But what did he do? Arjuna converted that curse into an opportunity. So he went to Indra. Indra told him that this will not be a lifelong curse. This will be a 1-year curse which will act on you. And then he said, you can choose the timing of when this curse will act on you. And he chose that in the Agnyatvas, when he became Brihanallah. So now the curse came upon them, but he converted it into an opportunity. You know, for Karna, he had a curse that his chariot would sink into the ground. If you look at it from the practical perspective, war is nothing. War, you have to always be practical. So he could very well have chosen that if my chariot is going to sink into the ground, I will not use the chariot as a weapon, the chariot as a vahan, as a carrier. He could have used the elephant as a vahan, or he could have had spare chariot wheels, or he could have prepared for that eventuality in various ways. So there's no point in crying that destiny is giving me a raw deal. Destiny gives a raw deal to everyone. And we have to make choices in our life to actually come to an auspicious conclusion. Now all this, actually despite all this, Karna got a very great opportunity. And that was just before the Kurukshetra war started, when Krishna came as Shantidut. At that time he saw Duryodhana was not ready to listen. Then Krishna went to Karna. The next morning before he was about to leave, Krishna went to Karna. And he told Karna that actually you are the son of Kunti. You are the eldest Pandava. You are a virtuous person. Come on the side of the Pandavas. You will become the king, and Yudhishthira and all the four Pandavas will follow you. Some people say that, you know, Krishna was so devious that Krishna wanted to create a split in the Kaurava ranks, and Krishna wanted to allure Karna on his side. That's one way of looking at it. But as I said, actually Arjuna had already proven his superiority over Karna. So it was not that Krishna was not confident whether Arjuna will be able to defeat Karna or not. Krishna's purpose when he came as Shantidut was to avoid bloodshed. It was not fear that we can't win the war. It was to avoid bloodshed. Now, when he found that bloodshed cannot be avoided, Krishna decided to try the next strategy, that is to minimize the bloodshed. So he knew among the Kauravas commanders, among the Kauravas generals, the commanders, the ruling main general. So among the Kaurava generals, Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, they're all formidable warriors. Even Ashwatthama, they're formidable warriors. But none of them had a strong antipathy towards the Pandavas. None of them hated the Pandavas. So the Kauravas themselves hated the Pandavas. And all the other kings who had joined on their side, they were also fighting on the fighting on Duryodhana's behalf. But they did not hate the Pandavas. So apart from the Kauravas, the only person who really had strong feelings against the Pandavas was Karna. So if Karna could be won over, the acrimony, the hatefulness that was there in the war, that would go down substantially. It would go down substantially, and thus the bloodshed could be minimized. Not only that, major confidence of Duryodhana to win the war came because of his confidence in Karna's prowess. So if Karna was not on his side, there's still a chance that Duryodhana may call off the war. If Karna comes over to Karna is no longer with Duryodhana's side, Duryodhana will not have the confidence. Who will fight with Partha? So Krishna was basically trying to, if not avoid bloodshed, then minimize bloodshed. And what reason did Krishna give him? Krishna told him that, you always felt that you did not get your birthright. Here is an opportunity for getting your birthright. You will become the eldest, you will become the ruler of the world. So if Karna's goal was to prove his superiority over Arjuna, Krishna was offering him that also. Because Arjuna would accept him as his eldest brother. And he would respect him. So actually this was an opportunity for Karna to make a right choice. But what was Karna's reasoning? Karna said, oh, it is because of Duryodhana's confidence in me that he has waged this war. And Duryodhana has given me so much. He has given me the kingdom. He has given me so many facilities for so long. And he says, you know, I have lived with my parents, Adirath and Radhe. And I have married and I have children over there. I cannot give all of them up. Now the thing was that this was his own imagination. Krishna had never told him to give any of them up. Now Krishna himself had two sets of parents. Now Krishna himself had Vasudeva Nanda and he had Vasudeva Devaki and Nanda and Vasudha. So Karna could also have had that way. Nobody was telling Karna that you have to give up your parents. Krishna's request was that don't fight on Duryodhana's side. Now there was no intrinsic connection between Duryodhana and Adirath and Radhe, his Karna's parents. So Karna did not have to give up his parents. But Karna sort of got confused in all this. He said, you know, this is where I have lived, this is where my position is, I cannot give it up. Now here, again, we are looking at intent, content and effect. So here, what happened to Karna, his reasoning was, Duryodhana has given me so much. How can I be ungrateful to him now? But the problem with this reasoning is, not only Duryodhana has given me so much, but also that I have given my word that I will fight on the side of Duryodhana. So how can I dishonor my word? So let's look at these two reasonings. First is that Duryodhana had done so much for him. Yes, I discussed earlier, it was not Duryodhana's kingdom to give. But still, if you assume that Duryodhana has given the kingdom, then, now, if somebody has done good for us, it is good that we be grateful to them. But any virtue has to be in proportion. Say, to give a provocative example, say, you know, especially in Pakistan and Afghanistan, the two Islamic countries where there's not much oil wealth. So there's a lot of poverty over there. And say there is some young child who's been starving, on the verge of death, and then some group of terrorists come and feed him, clothe him and take care of all his needs, and he's on the verge of death and he's saved at that time and he feels so grateful to them. So you have saved my life, without you I would have died, so I'll give my life for you. Now at that time for him, those people who gave him food, clothing, shelter, they will just seem like good Samaritans. Now they are just people who did so much good for me. But as he grows up and he recognizes, these people, what do they want me to do? They want me to kill innocent people. They want me to become a murderer of innocent people. So does my gratitude to them oblige me to kill innocent people? No, gratitude is a virtue. But gratitude also has to be seen in the context of a broader picture of what am I doing in my life. So Karna's gratitude to Duryodhana is laudable. But when Duryodhana is so vicious that he's ready to strip Draupadi naked in a public assembly, you know, so if such a person gets untrammeled power, you know, what can such a person do in society? Now, as long as Duryodhana was ruling, the 12-13 years he ruled, he did not really do anything, he ruled well. He did not do any unrighteous activities, but that was a strategy. Because he wanted to win over the citizens, he wanted to win over the courtiers. Because his hold on the kingdom was insecure. The Pandavas were going to come back. And he was currying, in one sense, you know, by giving gifts, by being charitable, he was winning their favor. But once the threat of the opposite of the Pandavas will be gone, there will be nothing to stop him from acting tyrannically, acting autocratically. So he had exhibited his vicious nature in trying to disrobe Draupadi, and he would have done far worse things later. So here we see that, you know, he had tried to burn the Pandavas, he had seized their well, he had dishonored their wife, he had tried to poison them. So he was definitely a dangerous person. And Karna's gratitude to Duryodhana was good, but it did not oblige him to go along with all of Duryodhana's schemes. So that is where he went wrong. Gratitude means, yes, I am grateful to someone, that person does something for me, I do something for them. It is not that lifelong I have to become bound to them and do whatever they are doing. His second reasoning was, I have given my word. And as a Kshatriya, how can I go against my word? Yes, that is the word of honor is important for Kshatriyas. And at the same time, you know, again, the word of honor, why is it important? Going back to intent, content and effect, you know, see, Kshatriyas have a lot of power. And if they have power and they can misuse that power, and if they misuse their power, it can cause terrible consequences. So one of the ways in which there is an inbuilt protection system is that Kshatriyas are taught very deeply that, you know, you are only, your value, your esteem, your prestige depends on your word. And therefore, if they make promises, they make, for example, when they swear into power, and that they give a word of honor, they take a vow. So what happens is the word of honor, or rather, giving a lot of honor to one's word is the way Kshatriyas are trained to act honorably. It's like if I make a promise to someone, you give me this much money, I'll give it back to you. But if I have a lot of power, you know, I may just refuse to give money to that person, and that person will be powerless to do anything else. But if I have a sense of honor, I have given you my word, I'll give you the money, I'll give it back to you. So basically, giving a high regard to one's word of honor, that is the means by which Kshatriyas are inspired to act honorably. The word of honor is itself not the ultimate end. The word of honor is meant to inspire one to act honorably. So otherwise, you know, people are so fickle. You know, it's like they speak one promise, and then even before the promise has gone out of their mouths, they've forgotten the promise also. It's like that. That's how many politicians are, unfortunately, today. But the word of honor is important, no doubt. So now what happens is, the word of honor is again a virtue, and it is meant to solidify the intent. Yes, I will act honorably. But again, the purpose of the word of honor is a life of honor, that one acts honorably and lives honorably. But for Karna here, the word of honor was not going to lead to a life of honor. Word of honor, if he said, I will stick to my word to Duryodhana, the result would be that he would have to fight on the side of Adharma. By fighting on the side of Adharma, he would be killed, and he would cause a terrible war to happen. So for him, actually, the choice was between the word of honor and the life of honor. By going over to the Pandava side, he would be acting according to virtue, and he would be actually living a life of honor. So here his mistake was that instead of choosing the life of honor, he chose the word of honor. So word of honor is important, but word of honor is not important in itself. Word of honor is meant to lead to the life of honor. Unfortunately, he neglected that aspect and he made that as an end in itself. And thus, at that time when he said, now it was so, he was so totally, so completely lost that he said, I know that Duryodhana is going to lose this war. The Kauravas are going to be killed. He says, Bhima will kill Duryodhana and Arjuna will kill me. The dice which Shakuni has cast against the Pandavas, that is going to come back as the arrows of the Gandiva. And the Kauravas are going to be killed by it. But he said, I cannot give up my word. So at that time, Krishna embraced Karna and he said, Vinashakale Viparita Buddhi. He says, well, one is meant to be destroyed, then one's intelligence is also destroyed. And he says, now we'll meet next on the war. So actually, this was Karna's opportunity for redemption. When Krishna offered him everything that he dreamt of, everything that he aspired for, Krishna said, you will get it all. But Karna rejected it. So Karna was not just a wronged person, Karna was also a wrong person. You know, he was wronged by life in many ways, but as I said, everyone is wronged in life. But the wrong things that happen to us don't justify wrong actions on our side. We still have the choice and we still have the obligation to act rightly. Unfortunately, when the big moment came for Karna, instead of acting rightly, he acted wrongly. And that's why everything that we do in our life, we always have to see it in terms of the ultimate purpose. This is the ultimate purpose being served by this. So Arjuna, so what happened is, he took the word of honor as the ultimate thing, rather than seeing the word of honor as a means to a life of honor. And that was his unfortunate blunder. And the consequence of it, he got on the 17th day in the war. And actually, when Karna fell, the war practically ended. Shalya became the commander the next day, but soon he was also destroyed. And then Duryodhana was killed. So Karna's death is on a tragic note in the Mahabharata. He's a heroic figure, but it's a tragic figure. And the tragedy is not just because of what happened to him, that is true, but it's also because of what he did. So both ways, the adverse thing that happened to him, but adverse things happen to everyone. In the epics, the Purana, Itihasas, are filled with adversities happening to people. You know, what was Ram's fault because of which he was exiled? What was Sita's fault because of which she was kidnapped? No, what was Urmila's fault because of which she had to live without her husband for so many years? The whole purpose of scripture is to show by example how to respond to adversity with integrity. Adversity comes in our life, but when adversity comes, how to respond with integrity? That is what scripture teaches us. And the Pandavas also got adversity, they responded appropriately. Karna got adversity. Unfortunately, when the crunch moment came, he did not respond right. And that was what sealed his fate. So it was not fate that sealed his fate. It was not some adverse destiny that caused him to be killed. Rather, it was his own choice, by which he sealed his fate. So I'll summarize. We can have some questions after that. I started by talking about how the rightness and wrongness of actions can be decided from three perspectives. Does anyone remember? Intent. Intent, content and effect. So I discussed about, basically for all this thing, I give a medical example. Just because I want to heal a person doesn't mean that intent is good enough. I have to have the medical training. So intent alone is not enough. And if you consider content, now I might be a very good surgeon, I can do the right surgery. But if I do the surgery in a way that aggravates the patient so that I can earn more money, the content is good, but the effect is not good over there. The patient is becoming sicker. So intent, content and effect, all three have to work out together for a thing to be good. And in different situations, different one of these may be given priority. So then we discuss with respect to Karna. Karna was in an emotionally vulnerable situation because he was not accepted for what he was. He was derided as a Suta. And at that time when Duryodhana accepted him, honored him, then he was won over. And his intent was just to have a friend who would give him a forum by which he would exhibit his archery skills. But later on, that intent did not remain that way. Because of the bad association of Duryodhana, the desire to please him, he also acted viciously, especially in the Kuru assembly with Draupadi. And thus, our association determines our intent. If we have good intention but not good association, the good intention will not last for long. And then in terms of content, we discussed about how Karna and Arjuna, Arjuna's competence was greater than Karna's. So Karna actually was outclassed by Arjuna thrice before their final war. And in Virat, in the fight with Gandharvas, and in the fight with Drupada. And then in terms of effect, we discussed that actually the whole Kurukshetra war, which was an extremely violent, bloody affair, that could have been avoided or at least minimized if Karna had made the right choice. So Karna's misdirected loyalty was his mistake, because of which he stuck on to the side of vice. So his gratitude initially is good, but eventually does gratitude doesn't mean that lifelong he's indentured to someone who is whatever they are doing. So to someone, no matter what they do, it's like a child committing to a life of terror just because a terrorist saved him in the time of need. That's disproportionate. And Karna got a raw deal in life, but from this lifetime's perspective, everybody gets a raw deal sometime or other. The Pandavas also got a raw deal in the sense that, you know, they were thrust into a place where they had an envious brother, cousin who was ready to kill them, and they were just not allowed to do anything peacefully. They were not given their administrative rights. So they also got a raw deal. So everybody gets a raw deal, but how we respond to it, that is important. And Karna, he was a wronged hero, but at the same time, he was also a wrong hero. And his big wrong was that when Krishna offered him the opportunity to win, to come to the Pandava side and get everything that he dreamt of, unfortunately, he chose not to take it. So the word of honor is meant to inspire us towards a life of honor. But Karna chose a word of honor at the cost of a life of honor. And thus he was doomed not by some adverse fate, but by his own wrong choice. So thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Maharaj.
Can you shed some light on Karna being the body where Krishna comes and asks him for his punya and that part?
Okay. So, when Karna leaves his body, at that time Krishna is said to have come and asked Karna for his punya. See, there is the Mahabharata that is written by Vyasadeva. And after that, there are many other retellings of the Mahabharata. And in many of these later retellings, Karna is cast often more and more in a heroic mold. So, there is no indication of this in the original Mahabharata. So, the later retellings, it's not that all later retellings are wrong, but we have to see whether the later retellings embellish the original story, who has told those retellings, and whether they embellish the original story or they contradict or go against the original story. So, the overall mood of Krishna is at that time to highlight that Karna is an offender and Karna deserves to be punished. So from the mood of the Mahabharata that Krishna will go and ask Karna for his punya, it's not compatible over there. So we see that as later retelling that is not in harmony with the original story. That's why we don't accept it as bona fide.
Vyasadeva
did. Oh, it's definitely not then Vyasadeva's Mahabharata. Oh. No, not at all.
And who was Karna in his previous birth?
Yeah. Who was Karna in his previous birth?
Yeah,
no, he was a demon named Sahasra Kavacha. Sahasra Kavacha, he was given a benediction that he would have 1,000 Kavachas on his body. And unless all the 1,000 Kavachas would be destroyed, he would not be killed. But the problem was, whoever would kill one, who would destroy one Kavacha, that person would die. So then how to kill him? So then Narnarayan Rishi were tasked with, they took up the task. Narnarayan said, there are two persons, but there are one person who are in two forms, you could say. So what would happen? Nara would fight with Sahasra Kavacha, and he would break one Kavacha, and Nara would fall dead at that time. But then at that time, when Nara would fall dead, Narayan word Narayan word take up the mantle. So actually they had, if the person would fall dead, they had the capacity to revive the person who would die. But even if you revive the person, still the person who has to kill Sahasra Kavacha, that person has to do tapasya for 1,000 years. So how they would do it is, one of them would keep fighting for 1,000 years, the other person would do tapasya for 1,000 years. And then when they would finally break the Kavacha, one Kavacha, that person would fall dead. And the second person who has done austerity, he would get out of the austerity. By that 1,000 year tapasya, he would get the potency to revive the first person and then start fighting again. And he would fight, and then he would fight for 1,000 years, destroy his Kavacha. And then when Kavacha would destroy, he would fall down. And then again he would rise. So it's a long, arduous battle. So he's a formidable demon, and he had been undefeatable before. It wreaked havoc. And then one Kavacha was remaining, and with that one Kavacha, the person who was born is known as Karna. Yes, Prabhu.
This Kurukshetra war was one of the bloodiest war. I think most people lost there. So
yeah.
Many actions, Senas, they talk about. Now, so we look at, take it this as a, you know, as a Mahabharata, not looking on the spiritual. So Krishna goes as a messenger to stop war. On the other side, he said that I have come to destroy all the Krishna. So how to see, one where he was trying to broker a peace, another side he wanted to, these people where they were burdened to the earth, they were to be eliminated. So
okay.
How to
see this? So at one side the Bhagavad Gita says that Krishna says I descend to destroy the Dushkritinas, but other side it is said that we see that Krishna went to seek peace. So did he want to destroy the Dushkritinas, or did he want to have peace with them? Actually, this goes down to the deeper philosophical question of God's omniscience and human free will. You know, if God knows everything including the future, then do I really have free will? It means, if God knows the future, then God knows how I am going to answer the question. Then if God knows how I am going to answer the question, then am I really choosing to answer that question? So this is a fundamental philosophical question. And the answer to that is that God's knowledge of the future is like our knowledge of the past. What that means is, it is knowledge without intervention. It is like today morning, you know, I wanted to wake up at 4 o'clock, but I wake up at 4:30. I know it, but I can't go back and change it now. I woke up late. It's done. So it's knowledge without intervention. So God also, his knowledge of the future is knowledge without intervention. That means he actually exists outside the time domain. So he's outside this cause-effect change. Cause-effect chain. And so basically, if we make this choice, this consequence will be there. If we make this choice, this consequence will be there. If we make this choice, this consequence will be there. But which choice we are to make, that is up to us. Krishna doesn't determine that. So if there is an intervention, then that means he would be determining. So he doesn't intervene. So God's knowledge of the future is like our knowledge of the past. It is knowledge without intervention. Intervention. So now, moving forward, applying this specifically to the Mahabharata context. See, Krishna's purpose, if we see, if you look at it grammatically, every sentence has a thrust. So, just the other day I was giving an example that how just by changing the sentence slightly, we can completely change the emphasis of the sentence. Now, if we want to praise someone, we just say, you know, he had some problems in the past, but he's stable now. But if you want to slight that person, we say, he's stable now, but he had problems in the past. The same statement, I just give it a different tilt by what I emphasize. So like that, you know, we have to, when we look at a sentence grammatically, what is the emphasis? So Krishna's purpose is not to परित्राणाय साधुना विनाशाय दुष्कृताम धर्म संस्थापनार्थाय संभवामि युगे. His purpose is not to destroy the Dushkritis. His purpose is to establish dharma. So if the Dushkritis can be reformed and dharma can be established, that's also fine. That serves his purpose. So if Duryodhana had been ready to come back to live dharmically, then Krishna was ready to forgive. See, the same principle we see that Ram sends a peace proposal to Ravana. He says, if you give Sita back, there will be no fight. So Ram has actually come to destroy Ravana. In one sense, that Devatas have prayed that Ravana is a terrible demon, he has to be destroyed. And why is Ram giving a peace proposal? Basically, Ravana, if he acknowledges that Ram is so powerful that he can't fight with him, and he returns Sita, then his demoniac actions are curbed. So it's not necessary that the bloodshed has to happen for dharma to be established. So the Krishna makes all efforts to avoid the bloodshed. His purpose is to establish dharma, but the Mahabharata demonstrates a principle that is actually standard in military operations. The principle is try for the best, prepare for the worst. So try for the best. Now try for a solution without any bloodshed at all. But while Krishna was going as Shantiduta, the Pandavas are also going, forming alliances with the other kings. So because Duryodhana had already been forming alliances for 13 years. So try for the best, but prepare for the worst. So Krishna was trying for the best by going as Shantiduta. In his ultimate purpose of trying to establish dharma. Okay, thank you. Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Kunti, so when was it before Karna's death or after his death that she revealed Karna that he is the eldest brother?
Yeah. So when did Kunti reveal to Karna? Yes, it was before the war. In fact, actually, this is way before the war. When Kunti realizes that now the war has become inevitable, Krishna's peace mission has failed. At that time, she goes and she desires that, right from her, when she first saw Karna enter the martial exhibition and she saw his kundal and kavach, she said, "This is my son." She was so delighted. But before she could do anything to acknowledge him, to meet him, suddenly she fell before her eyes, what is probably a mother's worst nightmare. To see her two sons become lifelong enemies. And at least at that point, she hoped that they were just rivals, not enemies. The rivals means there is a skill in which both of them are trying to excel. But enemies means you are out to kill each other. But when the war took place, and when the final war became inevitable, at that time she decided, I have to do something to save Karna. And that's why she went to Karna and told him that she knew Karna was charitable and she wanted to get Karna to avoid the war. She told him that you are the son of, you are my eldest son. She basically offered the same thing that Krishna offered to him. But he refused. And actually, again, he refused thinking now some people describe as Kunti asked him, don't kill my other sons. Kunti did not ask him like that. Now what Karna, he was also very reputation conscious. Because at one level, because he was a Suta, he was not given adequate honor. So he always wanted to maintain his good name. And for that purpose, he wanted to make sure that no one could ever cast any aspersion on his charitable nature. So he said, "Oh Kunti, you have come to ask me for something, I will not let you go empty-handed." He said, "You will always have five sons." And as he said, "I will kill Arjuna or he will kill me. But other power Pandavas I will not kill." So it is true that he kept honored his word, and the 16th day he had opportunity to attack and even kill the other Pandavas. He did not kill them. That is his virtue. But again, he did not do what his mother told him to do. And that was again a part of his wrong choice.
When did Kunti reveal to other Pandavas that?
After their death. When Kunti revealed to Yudhishthir and others that Karna was their brother, yes, after their death, actually Karna told her, don't reveal to the Pandavas. And he felt that the war was inevitable and he wanted to fight. He didn't want Arjuna to be weakened. He wanted to have the test of their skills. If Arjuna had known, Arjuna would not have fought against his elder brother. Yudhishthir would not have allowed them to fight against their elder brother. So he told her, don't tell them. And after the war, when Kunti told, Yudhishthir was furious. He said, why did you not tell this to me before? So, but it was at that time she told him.
So did Karna ever regret at any point of time that he was in the wrong side? Or he was always knowing, I was always dishonored, so I have to do myself.
Did Karna ever feel that he had made a wrong choice by fighting on the side of the Kauravas? Well, see, the Mahabharata does not really give us insights into the thoughts of the characters. It's only when we look at their words we come to know some things. Now, as far as words are concerned, he definitely regrets his actions in dishonoring Draupadi. And he tells Arjuna, Krishna, at that time when Krishna and Karna meet for the last time, when Krishna has gone Shantidut, he says that I had a dream. In this dream, I saw that Yudhishthira was dressed in white clothes. He was in a chariot driven by white horses and was rising upwards with a crown on his head. And I saw Duryodhana dressed in black with a shaved head. And he was driven by a car, he was in a cart drawn by asses, and that was moving downwards. So basically he interpreted that dream to mean that Yudhishthira was going to be successful and Duryodhana was going to die. And he himself tells the meaning of that, and he says that I am going to die in this war. So in that sense he knew that he was doomed, destined to die. But he was convinced that what he was doing was the right thing. So there is no, as far as I have read, I have not seen anywhere where Karna regrets his choice. So that is actually, that is often a problem. That, when it's like, I talked earlier about moral crisis and ethical crisis. Moral crisis means the right choice and there is a wrong choice, but I don't have the moral strength to make the right choice. Say, if somebody offers me money to fudge some medical results, then I just have to resist the lure of money. I know that this is wrong and I will not do it. Or I know this is wrong, but somehow I do it. But at least I know it is wrong. But when there is an ethical crisis, that means there are two choices. Both seem to be right. Which is more right, that which is of a higher level of rightness? That is what is to be decided. Sometimes when people are convinced that they are right, then they just become blind to the other perspective. So people rarely do wrong as cheerfully, as regretlessly, as when they are convinced by their beliefs that they are right. So he had the idea that, oh, I am right. So this is the right thing for me to do. That was his misfortune. So he did not listen to the counsel of others. Yeah, come to you. Yeah.
You said Karna chose this fate. Is it possible, or if he has chosen his fate, is it not that fate, real fate? Can anybody choose his fate? I knew Bhishma chose his time of death.
Okay. So I said Karna chose his fate. But can we say then that that choice was his fate?
Yeah.
Just as say Bhishma chose Ichchamrityu. See, here we have to understand that the word fate can have multiple meanings. Usually the word fate means something unfortunate is happening. That was his fate. On a fateful day. That means on a very day when something terrible is going to happen. So usually destiny refers to what happens to us, whereas our free will is how we respond to what happens to us. Destiny determines what happens to us, our free will determines how I respond to it. So two people may get the same sickness, same germ may affect them, or same sickness, two people may get the same sickness, and one person may just get resentful, frustrated, depressed. The other person may look at the bright side, or at least the sickness is diagnosed. I have a good doctor, I'll be treated, soon I'll be cured. So what happens to us is determined. We cannot say that our choice is destined. Our choice is up to us. In the Vedanta Sutra, commentary by Baldev Vidya Bhushan, it's called Govinda Bhashya. There he quotes the previous Vedanta Sutra commentators, and he says that if we say that our choice is determined, if our choice is destined, then he says scripture becomes meaningless. Because scripture tells us, do this and don't do this. If you do this, you'll get good. If you do this, you'll get bad. Therefore, do this and don't do this. When scripture is telling us, do this and don't do this, that means we have the capacity to do this and not do this. So scripture would itself become meaningless if our choices were destined. We can say that we are prompted towards certain choices. We are pushed towards certain choices. But we are not forced. See, pushing means somebody can push me in this direction. But I can hold and push back. So like that, all of us, based on our past habits, past conditionings, we are pushed towards certain actions. So a person who is habitually eating meat, person is again pushed to eat meat. The person's higher intelligence awakens, person's conscience awakens, the person will decide, no, I don't want to eat this anymore. So we cannot, no one can say that I was fated to make this choice. You can say that I was fated to come under this circumstance. But what I do in that circumstance is up to me. Now, as far as Bhishma Dikshamrityu is concerned, no, it was that he chose the moment of his death. But it is not that, even in his case, it was not that he was destined to die at a particular time. He was going to die. He had chosen to fight against the Kauravas, against the Pandavas. That means he would have to die. His choice was the exact moment of the death. So even in his case, it was not that his choice was destined. He chose to fight on the side of the Kauravas. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes, please. We'll come here. Yeah. How many soldiers were there on each side of the Kauravas and Pandavas? See, usually in scripture, whenever you get into figures, there is always a source of confusion. Because see, every book has its purpose. And we need to keep that purpose in mind whenever we study scripture. Scripture is itihas. But it is not itihas of the, it is not history of the kind that we understand as modern history. Modern historiography, it started from post-Newtonian times. Post-Newtonian times means Newton, from his time onwards, when science started focusing more on measurable, quantifiable things. Then exact dates, exact figures, exact numbers started becoming very important. And then history also became more all about exact figures. If we look at even, say, Homer and other people in Rome who wrote historical books, for them, history was to be written or recited not exactly for factual precision. History was to be studied and repeated for the sake of moral elevation. That is the primary purpose, and that's why people would not get particularly obsessed about specific figures. So the Mahabharata does talk about figures at different levels. So one level, of course, we know that the 18 Akshahunis. But then the count of Akshahunis is given, and later on when Yudhishthir is asked, Dhritarashtra asks Yudhishthir, how many casualties were given? The figure that is given over there seems to be much bigger when it talks about it. It's not 18 Akshahunis as we know what is the count of the Akshahunis. So some explanation of that is that these 18 Akshahunis were the Akshahunis of Manavas, of humans. But along with that, there were Rakshasas on both sides also. On the Pandava side, there was Bhima's son Ghatotkach, who had brought Rakshasas with him. And similarly, on the Kaurava side, there was a Rakshasa Alambush, who was the brother of Bakasur, not the Bakasur of Krishna-lila, the Bakasur whom Bhima had killed. So, and he had also brought many Rakshasas. So, like that, this 18 Akshahuni refers primarily to human soldiers. And there were non-human soldiers also who were fighting. And their count is separate. But broadly speaking, getting into figures is quite often a source of distraction and confusion. And Srila Prabhupada did not get into this so much. In the 10th, 11th chapters of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a description of how Krishna leaves Hastinapur and comes to Dwarka. And the path is described. Krishna came through this city, this city, this city, this city. And finally he came there. And then Prabhupada writes in the purport over there that actually historians or scholars may try to find the exact path by which Krishna came to Dwarka. He says that is almost an impossible task, because the surface of the earth, geosurface geology, always keeps changing. They can do the research, but as far as we are concerned, we are simply satisfied that Krishna has come to Dwarka and is going to perform pastimes with his devotees now. So sometimes, one sign of intelligence is to know what is central and to know what is peripheral. And to hold on to the central and to not hold on to the peripheral. So in scriptural study, the exact figures are not very important. The important thing is, what are situations, what are the decisions, what are the ethics for the making those decisions. That is what is important in scripture. And if we keep that purpose in mind, we can avoid a lot of distraction. Now, if somebody wants to go in a specialized field and maybe do historical research of the Mahabharata, that is fine. Then they can do that, but that's a different forum. We have very limited time. And we have to focus on the things in scripture that will inspire us to grow in our bhakti. And other things sometimes can take so much time that we get distracted by those things. So best is not to focus too much on figures when we facts and figures. Most important, this is not to say the facts and figures are not true or facts and figures are not given. The point is the focus. The focus is that we want to learn how to evolve in our spiritual life, learn to have better human beings, better devotees, and how to learn. We want to learn how to move towards Krishna. Okay, thank you. So shall we stop here?
Thank you.
So
thanksgiving. All thank you. Thank you very much for
inspiring. Great. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki. Shri Mahabharat ki. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki. Itai Gaur Premanande.